and welcome to another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler. Matt will be back for next week's episode, but for this short little one, I will be flying solo. However, we'll be joined by three fantastic guests. We got Richie and Dennis from the Goalless Standard podcast talking about LaSalle's huge win over Dayton. They're coming up, as is the Master of Mayhem himself, Ryan Paleo, on to talk about GW crushing Fordham today and the two recent transfers from earlier this week. But with such a fun day in the league today, quite honestly, the best time I can remember watching A-10 games on a weekday, with games spread out from noon to 9, I just really wanted to take a few minutes and wrap up some of the things we saw, starting with really the two most interesting games of the day, at least from my perspective. George Mason winning in double overtime over UMass, and LaSalle beating Dayton basically at the buzzer. So we'll start things off with a team that very rarely leads this podcast, the George Mason Patriots. They really could have lost that game at a whole lot of different points. And it's really just kind of been a continuation of what has been just an absolute roller coaster of a season for the Patriots so far. But two just fantastic rays of light have started to become very obvious for this team. Number one, Jordan Miller's becoming a star before our eyes. We saw so many incredible flashes from him his freshman year, which, to people who don't remember, he was supposed to redshirt. He started practicing with the Patriots and became so impressive that they burned his redshirt at the beginning of conference play on a very senior-laden team, because that's how special Dave Paulson thought he was. He was fantastic that first year, didn't take much of a leap last year. Well, he's taking that leap now. We saw the flashes early in the year, 30 points, 9 rebounds against Howard, 19 points, 9 rebounds the game after that against Belmont. Then Mason goes on pause for COVID. They come back. Miller serves a short suspension for God knows what. We still don't have any clarification on that. Speculation was violation of COVID protocols, but all we have is speculation right now. He finally gets rolling in this game. Has to come off the bench again, but ends up playing 41 minutes after both overtimes are said and done. Puts up a triple nickel, 26 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. And quite frankly, from crunch time into the two overtimes, he was the best player on the floor for both teams. Just utterly fantastic. He finishes things off by fighting his way through a double team into the paint, gets his own rebound, gets fouled, and then, tired as can be, just strolls to the line, hits the game-tying free throw, and then hits the game-winning free throw. He's becoming an all-conference player right now. And if I had to redo my predictions for this season, I think he has to be on that team. He's Mason's leader. He's their star. And quite frankly, I don't think he's hit his ceiling yet. The other super promising thing that really kind of punctuated itself in this game is the play of their freshman point guard, Tyler Kolek. He's still young. He still makes a lot of mistakes, but he's growing fast. He's coming off of back-to-back 19-point games now, having really been the only guy who played well in their loss to Norfolk State last week. And I'm really starting to believe that years from now, Mason fans are going to look back and just be in awe that over a 9-year period, they had 4 years of Otis Livingston and 4 years of Tyler Kolek. I'm not saying he's going to be quite as good as Livingston, but he is a guy that really looks like he's going to be one of those special 4-year point guards. We all know what I'm talking about. That guy who, maybe he never makes the NBA, but he's just the guy that you hate it when your team has to go up against him. You respect what he does because he's so great, but you know he's going to make a ton of big plays against you. Tyler Kolek is looking like he's going to be that guy. someone that 4 years from now, we're going to be amazed that he's still at Mason because we have so many years worth of highlights from him. So moving forward, coming out of this game, what is Mason? They're 1-0. I certainly don't believe that they're a lock for the pillow fight like people have been saying. They're probably going to finish somewhere in that 9-14 range, but when you look at all the teams down there, they're the squad that's probably the most likely to beat a very good team at a very inconvenient time. I could see them knocking off St. Louis or Richmond at some point in the middle of February and people just being in awe because their record's not that good. But the fact of the matter is the top-level talent on this team is really good. Now that Miller and Kolek are rolling and they got two consistent guys at the top, this team becomes super dangerous. And that's despite the fact that A.J. Wilson and Javon Green just really have not done that much this year. Both of them were legitimate candidates for All-Conference last year. They both just barely missed out, and if you had put either of them on your preseason team this year, I wouldn't have faulted you. Green comes out this year, he drops 19 in the season opener, and he's been pretty quiet ever since. A.J. Wilson was dealing with injuries that first week, and I mean, we really have not seen anything special out of him this year. Put up 22-10 in the VMI game, and other than that, he's basically been non-existent. He was a guy who reminded me of Jeremy Grant last year, just in terms of his athleticism and what he can do just with his flexibility all around the court. Now, I think that Mason hasn't quite been using him in the best ways so far this year, but even that wouldn't fix what has been just a really nondescript season. Now, if just one of those two get going in these next few weeks, then Mason's ceiling is certainly way higher than that of a pillow fight team. If you get Wilson and Miller playing like all-conference guys and Kolek coming into his own, then all of a sudden this is a squad that's a lot closer to the 8-9 game than they are to playing on Wednesday. I still don't know what to make of George Mason. I think a lot of people say that the way that they won this game was kind of fluky, and UMass certainly didn't do anything to win it themselves. But what Miller and Kolek and Jamar Hartwell did in those overtimes was great. And those three went out and won this game for Mason, despite the fact that Green got hurt in the first half and five other key guys fouled out at some point or another. Got to watch out for the Patriots. They're going to be dangerous this year. As for the team they played tonight, UMass, I don't want to harp on it too badly, but the mistakes just piled up over and over in that game. They were up by at least 7 at one point in both overtimes. They were up 8 with 1:10 to go. And really, that stretch right there is just, it's how UMass is going to have all of this great talent and yet not be close to a double bye this year. For those of you who didn't watch, UMass gives up a 3 with about 1:06 left when they were up by 8. Mason cuts it to 5. That's okay. That happens all the time. Then they call timeout, and this is where the real mistakes come in. They decide to go for a home run and try to just chuck the inbounds pass all the way down the court. It's too far. Carl Pierre can't even get a finger on it. So Mason gets an inbounds under their own hoop. UMass then doubles down by letting Miller get a wide open layup and triples down by fouling him on it. He ends up with an and one, and in a matter of 4 seconds, UMass's lead goes from 8-2 because of not one, not two, but three really bad mistakes. Some from the coaching staff, some from the players on the floor. And this, you know, UMass is just so sloppy this year. That's the biggest problem. It's sloppy defense. It's sloppy shot taking. It's sloppy coaching. All across the board, this team is just not disciplined. Now, thankfully, discipline is something that you can develop over the season. And their game on Saturday against St. Louis just got canceled. And I hope they take that practice time and really try to find new ways to get through to their players. and find new ways to go about these games, because they have a chance to be really good, and right now they're not going to be if they continue to play this way. Some other little notes there. Everybody who listens to this knows that I am all in on TJ Weeks. The shot's not falling for him, and it's just feels kind of fluky. Everything that he's doing on the court physically indicates a guy who's healthy and indicates a guy who can really carry over what he did in those 2 months last year. And I'm so happy to see that Matt McCall is trusting him even through his struggles. But I do wonder if maybe UMass needs to replace him with a defender on the court at the end of games. Because if the shot's not going to fall, then UMass shouldn't be putting out four guys who are not above average defenders on the court when they're up by eight late in the game. And that's how him and Fernandes and Mitchell and Pierre are. And there's so much pressure on Ronnie DeGray to really be the one good defender on the court. By the way, I'll go more in depth later, but I really, really like Ronnie DeGray. And he's a guy who's going to be a special role player for this team for years to come. He fits so perfectly in between Mitchell and Weeks on the court. But I just wonder if maybe they should be replacing Weeks with a defender down the stretch if he's going to continue to cold shoot. Now, the bench doesn't exactly have that many great defenders. And the guy that they really missed tonight was Colton Mitchell. I've been really worried about his role on this team. He's a guy that I personally really like watching him play. But with Fernandes and Javon Garcia on this team now, his minutes have dwindled rapidly. And his role has really kind of disappeared. Well, tonight they didn't have him available due to some injury issues. And I think they really missed him. They needed him in that second overtime chasing Jamal Hartwell around the court, as his fresh legs just got free of their tired starters. And he ended up hitting four threes in those two overtime periods. If Mitchell was healthy, I think he needed to be out on that court chasing Hartwell. And tonight we really saw what he brings to the table for the Minutemen. And hopefully Matt McCall recognizes that and is able to give him a better, more proper role going forward. So last but not least, before we go into our terrific guests tonight, the other big game of the night, we're going to cover the LaSalle angle with Richie and Dennis from the Golis Standard right after this. But I want to take a few minutes to talk on the Dayton angle. And, you know, there was a lot of vitriol, a lot of Dayton fans bummed out on Twitter. A lot of the main guys whose takes I really respect were just really ripping them apart tonight. And I get it. It was an incredibly disappointing loss. And as a Dayton fan, I'm insanely bummed out that they lost at home to LaSalle. They should have won that game. I picked it in the eliminator poll. Like, that's how much confidence I had in the Flyers, despite losing Chase Johnson, despite not having Blakeney and Weaver. They're better than this team, plain and simple. But I'm not going to slap the panic button. Look, this is not last year's team. This is not one of the two or three best teams in the A-10. And when that happens, you lose bad games occasionally. So let's give them time and see if they bounce back from this. Now, if they start to pile up other bad losses on top of it, I mean, they play George Mason and Fordham coming up this week. If they lose one of those two games, then yeah, let's start freaking the hell out about this team. But tonight can be an aberration if they fix their two biggest fixable issues. Number one, the defense, which just looks like they could shut down the Lakers in the first 10 minutes of each of these games, has not held up in the second half at all. This is not an isolated issue from tonight's game. This is a season-long issue that the Flyers have just lost their legs late in the game. Well, how do you fix that? I'm not sure. There's a few different ways, and only Anthony Grant knows what's causing them the true problem. Maybe it's that they're playing defense too aggressively early in the games. Maybe that's why it looks so great early on. Maybe, more likely, it's because the starters are just gassed at the end of these games. You look at the minutes breakdown for today. Jalen Crutcher, 40 minutes. E.B. Watson, 36. Rodney Chapman, 34. Mustafa Amzil, who was in high school like 2 weeks ago, played 36 minutes. And then they split up the minutes at center. You just can't expect guys to do this game after game and still be able to hold up on the defensive end late. And this is becoming a big problem for the Flyers. We've seen the defense fall apart late in games. Today was just the most extreme example. They've let these teams just hang around and hang around. LaSalle put up 2 points in the first 9.5 minutes. They put up 42 in the second half. That can't happen. That's how you lose to bad teams. They need to figure that out first and foremost. How do they continue to play great defense in the final 10 minutes? And then the other part of it is Jalen Crutcher's just too unselfish. And it feels so weird to say. And his unselfishness was maybe the most special thing about last year's great team. But unfortunately, Obi Toppin's gone. Ryan Mikesell's gone. Trey Landers is gone. And so Jalen Crutcher needs to be more than just a share the wealth passer. He has to put this team on his back on nights like tonight when Ibby Watson is not able to carry the scoring load. Jalen Crutcher can't shoot 10 times in a game with this team. There's just not enough other offense there. And so whether it's just something in his own passive mind that needs to be changed, whether it's something in the game plan, or maybe it's other guys just being too aggressive with the shots, this needs to be fixed. The best player on the floor did not touch the ball in the final minute of this game. And you can clearly see that on Dayton's second to last possession, they drew up the play to give him the ball. LaSalle snuffed it out. It was too easy of a play call. He has to have the ball in his hands. And we saw what happens when he does and when he's being aggressive. Midway through the second half, when their offense was dead, he brought them back into the game. And he tried to force up a heat check shot about 4 steps behind the 3-point line that the announcers criticized him for. I completely disagree with that. He is the one guy in this conference that I want to shoot from that range because he is comfortable from there. And wherever Jalen Crutcher is comfortable shooting the ball, he needs to take his shots from there. Look, this guy is still one of the 3 best players in this conference. And Dayton still has a chance to get a double bye. And if he can boost up the scoring and lead them there, he might still be the player of the year in the A-10. I'm not going to say it's likely at this point, but he's still 100% capable of it. But the mindset needs to change around his role on this team. So yeah, I'm bummed out that Dayton lost. I'm not going to sit here and yell that the sky is falling. Because this team is playing like what they are, which is somewhere between the 4th and 7th best team in this conference and a potential NIT team. And you know what? That's what happens when you lose 3 starters from a special team and one of your key bench guys in Dwayne Cohill. And then you lose your breakout star in Chase Johnson midseason. And you lose 2 bench guys to practice injuries tonight. Look, if they had Blakeney and Weaver tonight to spare their guys some of the minutes and to give them a little bit of an offensive boost off the bench, they probably win this game. So I'm not ready to panic yet. They're going to figure it out because I trust Anthony Grant and I trust Jalen Crutcher. And right now, this is in their hands. They got a beautiful opportunity. They're going to play George Mason and Fordham in their next 2 games. Those are teams that you have a chance to get right when you're playing against. The last thing on this, Mustafa Amzil. This guy was in high school a few weeks ago. He just early enrolled. He's practiced with this team for less than 2 weeks. And yet, he walked onto that court. It was Dayton's best guy. 22 points on 9 of 14 shooting, 7 rebounds. But more impressive than that was just the fact that he looked so natural in the flow of the college game. He had never experienced this before. He just walked out there like he belonged. He wasn't scared. He wasn't slow. What I saw from him tonight was nothing short of flat-out special. In fact, I can't remember a freshman debut that special in a long, long, long time. Not just for Dayton, but for any of these teams that I watched. This is the kind of stuff that happens with five stars at power conference schools, that they enroll midway through the year and then just show up and look like a superstar on night one. This kid is special. I only needed one game to be able to see that and to be able to say that. This loss is going to be forgotten. Maybe not next week, maybe not next month, but eventually Dayton fans are going to forget that they lost to LaSalle at home. But I don't think they're going to forget how great Mustafa Amzil was in his debut. And that's what I'm going to take away from tonight. Yeah, it sucks that Chase Johnson's gone, and I wish that dude the best, because clearly there's something wrong. And I hope that whatever it is, he's able to get the proper help. But I feel a lot better about this team than I did a few hours ago because of what I saw tonight from that freshman. So, without further ado, we got some great guests coming up. I'm going to pass things off to the guys from the Gola Standard to talk about the LaSalle angle of this game. All right, so one of the biggest games of the night, certainly LaSalle's huge upset in UD Arena, beating the Flyers in Dayton for the first time in the 21st century. And so joining me tonight, we have the two guys from the Gola Standard podcast, a new LaSalle basketball podcast. They are really bringing some energy to the fan base there. We got Richie and Dennis. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Tyler.
Yeah, and if nobody's listened yet, be sure to check out the Gola Standard. These guys are doing some good work, really coming into their own and making a nice podcast. So we'll start off with tonight's game. You guys moved to 1-1 in the conference. And to me, I really saw it as a group effort. It was great ball movement. A lot of guys were hitting shots. But from your perspective, who do you really see as the MVP for the Explorers?
You want to go?
Go ahead, Rich. Start us off.
All right, so for me, you know, LaSalle kind of started off slow in the game. I think it was, what, 10-2 or 12-2? And then, like, this guy wasn't getting a lot of playing time. But I feel like as soon as Ayinde Hakeem came in, he really lit a spark on that team. I mean, they got it close within 5 points, I believe, at halftime. And then, I mean, I feel like he was the spark that kind of led them in that direction. What would you say, Dennis?
I agree, and we were incredible beyond the arc. We hit just about every shot that we missed in the past, like, 5 games. It felt like it was just like an unloading. It was kind of like waiting for it to happen. And it finally, we finally caught fire. With all of these guards, it's really hard to push the right buttons at the right time. And in the second half, Ashley was a maestro. He definitely created the best situations for our players down the stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah, Richie, you're remembering the beginning of the game even more positively than it was. You guys were down 16-2 with 10 and a half minutes to go to the first half. And, you know, I was starting to prep all of the, is LaSalle even going to get to 20 points in this game jokes. You eventually get to 67. To me, I would just say my personal MVP was Ashley Howard. Because he seemed to be prepared for something that Dayton has really shown us multiple times this year, which is that their defense runs out of gas in the second half. And they will discourage teams in those first 10 minutes like they did today. And really, it can become a mental grind. And the Explorers stayed mentally positive.
That's right. I mean, every game we've seen so far, our defensive intensity was at a level that was very respectable. There was no, like, lackadaisical play on defense that we saw throughout non-conference. And now in conference, that is especially important on the road. And they were just like dogs. They were after it. And honestly, I think they're getting better and better each game because they held their own against Maryland as well. About as good as you can against a Power Five team like Maryland. And it's reflecting. I mean, the culture is building. I feel like we're building a program that is, the defensive intensity comes first. and offense will figure itself out like it did tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, Tyler, he had such a good game plan, Ashley Howard. I feel like I've never seen this team, like their defense, look as good as it did, like, tonight. I mean, I've been used to seeing, like, John Giannini's teams, and that performance that they had tonight, they look great. I mean, on the other hand, that one Dayton player, what was his
Amzil?
Name? Amzil. So he was, on ESPN, like, you know, guard, forward, center, they have him as athlete. Like, he come out of high school?
He was in high school a few weeks ago. He graduated. He was a mid-year December graduate. And I don't know the exact days, but he's been practicing with the team for less than 2 weeks.
Incredible. You can't game plan for that, I guess.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I mean, he really kind of filled the Chase Johnson role today. We got the disappointing news that he was going to be walking away from the program again just a few hours before the game. And then the Flyers were also without his backup, RJ Blakeney, who suffered a minor injury in practice last week. And yeah, I mean, really the one great positive from a Dayton perspective in this game was Mustafa Amzil. Comes in out of really completely nowhere. We were stunned that he was even starting. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but it reminds me of Jordan Miller 2 years ago with George Mason, who just had his red shirt burned halfway through the season. No one knew who the hell he was when he was announced as a starter in his first game. And then he came out and dropped 20 points. And Amzil had even less practice than that. So,
we couldn't stop him.
No, we couldn't.
I was amazed by what he did. The other guy I was amazed by today, Jack Clark. And he's someone that I know you guys have had your eye on for over a year now. He's battled injuries. He's been maybe the most promising guy on your roster. I'm kind of surprised to see he was only 5 of 11 shooting. I felt like they were zooming in on his face a lot in big moments in that game. What do you see from him the rest of this year coming out of this game?
Go ahead, Rich.
I feel like he's a big part of the offense. You know, I feel like our front court's kind of limited. You know, you have him and Clifton Moore, but he's a guy who can kind of do it all. I mean, he can handle a little bit. Dennis was saying a little earlier, I've never seen a guy like dunk like that. Like, he's been getting a lot of like follow-up dunks, but he's a guy who can kind of do it all. And I expect a lot from him. I expect him to be one of their leading scorers the entire season, and he should be a really big part of the team.
I agree. He's going to be getting the most minutes, I would say, out of our guards.
Yeah.
And not to slight our seniors in any way, but they took a back seat during
big
this
time.
Game.
Beattie barely played.
Yeah,
Beattie started, got those two fouls, and I don't know if he played again after that.
4 minutes for him in this game.
Yeah, so that takes a lot to be a senior and kind of like let the freshman, Jack Clark, who I believe is a redshirt sophomore, like let the youth kind of run the show because they were incredible. Sharif Kenny, there's just so many guys that made an impact. So and credit to those guys for just kind of letting Ash control it, and obviously they had to sit, but it worked out really well.
Yeah, I feel like with Ashley Howard, like, I don't know what his game plan is, but he rides the hot hand. Like, Beattie, 4 minutes, that's it. Like, he's going to, you know, A-N day, sometimes in play, but he rode him tonight. Like, he's going to ride that hot hand, and because, like, you know, he's going to ride that hot hand until it's cold. I mean, Sharif Kenny played real tough tonight. He gave them a lot of good minutes, and he's been coming on as well.
Yeah, I think for the common A-10 fan, Jameer Brickus has kind of become the big name to them. I know he's almost become a meme on Twitter. Everyone loves to tweet out the Brickus emoji.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like he didn't have that much of an impact on the game. He ended up with 11 points, which was third on your team. So I guess he was important. But, you know, if you had told me that LaSalle would win this game and I would feel like Jameer Brickus wasn't on the court, then I would have told you were nuts.
Ayinde is the reason for that, I believe. Since Ayinde was in, that was basically a timeshare tonight that none of us expected. Brickus does bring a degree of a calm demeanor. He brings a calm demeanor to the floor. He was the opposite of Ayinde in the past. Ayinde was kind of like a turnover machine. And it was definitely end up in the doghouse many times. So to have Allende come in late in games and this game in particular and control and do as well as Brickus would have done was really impressive. And it just shows us that we now have two guards in our arsenal that can run point.
Yeah, I mean, Brickus, I feel like he's a type of player, like he's calm and I feel like plays a lot better than like a freshman. But sometimes he'll get like a quiet 10 points or quiet 11 points. I feel like that's kind of what you saw tonight.
Tyreek Duren. Tyreek Duren is what Brickus reminds me of.
It's like, oh, he got 11? Like, oh, wow.
Yeah. He helps out in other ways, too.
So after this game, who are your five right now? Let's say it's a tie game, 1 minute to go. Who would you trust in that moment? Because I feel like this is a better question for LaSalle than almost any other team. Because as you guys mentioned, the lineups are really flexible every game.
Big time. You want to go? Me go?
I'll start.
All right.
Let me see. This is tough, though. This is like, I feel, like I said, this is a tough job for Ash because there's so many guys that can make a difference. Recently, we just talked about him. Jack Clark, definitely going to be in there. Brickus, Clifton. And then Christian Ray did a lot of things that we don't talk about. I think Rich is laughing because he was definitely going to say Christian Ray as well. And then I want to say Kenny, because he is most likely to hit the outside shot. I can see him being one of those guys that can catch fire late in games. And he caught fire tonight for sure. Rich, what do you think? Did I hit the nail on the head or did I?
I have the same. I'm pretty sure I have the same five. I have Brickus. I have Kenny. I have Ray. I have Clark. And I have Moore. You said those five, right? Because I feel like right now they're playing the best. I mean, Allende had a great game tonight, but those late game situations, I feel like that's the best five. You would have thought it was Beattie, but he's hot and cold. I feel like a lot of players, this team, it's hot and cold. You know what? You don't know what you're going to get on a given basis, but they got a lot of dudes, and it's like some nights one dude might go off. Some nights another guy might go off. Like Amar Gill didn't have it tonight, but he could have it against Fordham on Saturday.
I'm honestly bummed out. I was hoping you were going to give me different answers here. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's so many different ways to go with this. I mean, to me, the biggest surprise is that you both kind of settled on Sharif Kenny last. To me, I think you'd probably be my second choice behind Jack Clark, right ahead of Brickus.
I was naming just like the five. Oh, okay. It was like one, two, three. Oh, no, I was just one through five.
To me, just – and I haven't caught all the LaSalle games this year. I think I've missed two of them. But just to me, Sharif Kenny is probably your most reliable guard at this point. Brickus certainly is the best, but he's far more inconsistent. And I feel like Kenny's your best three-point shooting threat.
I agree. Kenny has – maybe in the games you missed, Kenny was a bit erratic. It's mentality. I think sometimes you could just tell through his demeanor on the court how he's going to perform. It's kind of one of those situations. So tonight, I don't know if someone got in his ear or something, like someone was talking trash to him or something, because he played like he was pissed off and was just on the offensive like nonstop. And if we get that Sharif Kenny, yes, I want him to start. But in previous games, I've seen him kind of be less than what we're used to tonight.
He can get points in a bunch. Like I feel like he's pretty hot. I don't know. Like I think not against Maryland, but the two games before, I think against Delaware and UMass, he had 16 points. So he's starting to come in on his own. I feel like he usually comes off the bench, but he definitely helps him out scoring. He's starting to get up there with their most consistent scorer now.
So one of the guys you mentioned, Clifton Moore, he gets the game winner, little catch, single dribble foul line jumper in the closing seconds. Certainly not the guy I expected to have the ball. And honestly, watching it as a Dayton fan, I was the most happy that the defender running past him didn't grab him. I thought he was about to commit a bad foul. And, you know, Moore calmly knocked it down at the end of the shot clock.
But just take me through your guys' thinking. Get the ball back, tie game. I think it was about 33 seconds left. What did you want to see run, and who did you want to see with the ball in their hand?
Well, I know in the past we've had success with Clifton on the pick and roll, and Clifton not being the last person with the ball, but rather being the first person, maybe kicking it out to a guard, setting a pick and roll, and then finding an, you know, Brickus can obviously penetrate. Ayinde can penetrate. And then if he gets a layup, kick it out to a Jack or a Sharif for the win. That scenario that happened this evening was not expected, because I don't think I've seen Clifton hit a mid-range shot yet. He's either a three-point shot or he's in the paint. So that was very surprising, and kudos to him for taking that shot. But honestly, that would be my perfect scenario. I would want Brickus. Number one option would be Brickus, and then Ayinde, because of his success this evening, I would want him also to have the ball. Jack is best catching and shooting. And so is Sharif, quite honestly.
Yeah. Ideally, my number one option would be Brickus. But I feel like, this might be a little off topic, but I think, their most important player, if you said one guy that I wouldn't want to get hurt, I think it's got to be Clifton Moore, just because they don't have much depth in the front court. I know that's kind of not the question you were asking, but in that situation, he has a nice looking shot. Like Dennis said, he hasn't really hit those mid-range shots, but I would say one is Brickus. For me, two, I would have went probably Clark, but he's starting to gain a lot of momentum. There's a reason why, I guess, he was recruited by Indiana.
So we'll wrap it up on this. I think the general consensus going into today is that the four pillow fight teams were going to be LaSalle, George Mason, George Washington, and Fordham in some order. Well, three of those four teams won today. You guys moved to 1-1. Both of the Georges are sitting tied for first at 1-0. So after tonight, just yes or no, is LaSalle going to be playing on Wednesday at the A-10 tournament?
Yes. I say yes. Only because we have more tools in the tool shed than we think we do. This team is out of the pillow fight teams, out of even, honestly, St. Joe's, I think we have more, if not more, offensive weapons than the Hawks. I'm going to go out and say that. And I think that if our defense is as powerful as we think it is, and that you're consistently getting steals and just defending really well, then yes, absolutely.
So I guess I labeled the question wrong, because Wednesday is the pillow fight. seems to me like you're confident that you guys are going to sneak into the 9 or the 10 spot, or maybe, God, after this, maybe even the 8. I don't think anyone expected you guys to get to the 8-9 game 2 years ago.
No, definitely not.
So you said no then?
Hang on.
What?
You asked if
no to playing on Wednesday. You guys are going to avoid Wednesday. You're going to get the bye and make it to Thursday.
We're going to finish higher than 11.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I said yes. That's what you're asking, right?
That's what I was asking, but I said it wrong. We had a little mishandling on the answering of the question.
we'll be able to edit that, I guess.
You said yes, but what you were giving would have been a no to my question.
Yes, yes. So. Yeah, I was like, I don't think you answered that right. I don't know if you intended to answer it that way.
We're going to avoid the pillow fight is what I was going to say.
This is like a radio hit. If you guys think I'm editing that out, it's not happening.
That's fine.
I edited out plenty of stupid mistakes, but we're leaving that in. Gave a good answer, so.
No problem. Yeah, I thought, okay, sorry, I misheard it.
All right.
Richie?
So we got, Fordham, Bros. All right, I'm going to say that they don't finish in the pillow fight. I'm going to say they slightly finish above that. I'm going to say in that 9-10 range as well.
The confidence that I expect to hear from the kings of LaSalle basketball media. Dennis and Richie from the Golis Standard, you guys coming off a huge win. You are the happiest men on A10 Twitter tonight. If anyone has not heard the podcast yet, go give them a listen. They're starting out. They need to build a fan base. Great having you guys on tonight. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks Tyler. Tyler.
All right, I'm now joined by the Master of Mayhem himself. Those of you deep in A10 Twitter certainly know who he is. Ryan Paleo, probably the king of fallen GW right now. How you doing tonight, Ryan?
I'm doing excellent. You know, coming off a good win, so I'm doing great. How about you?
It was a great day of A10 basketball. That's why we're doing this. This was an unscheduled pod, but you know, felt the need to give this message to the people. So we'll start it off with your game today. I think a certain niche group of Twitter got really fired up about getting to watch this. Honestly, some people thought that this would be a battle of the two basement teams today. But GW comes out, pounds Fordham 71-47, and certainly did not look like a basement team to me. Just a great game from James Bishop, 23 points. Jameson Battle, 24. Sloan Seymour kicked in 11 in the first half. So who got you the most excited during that game today? A lot of guys playing better than they had been the last month.
I would say for me, it's Abby Battle. You look at, you know, he's looking more like what he did last year, making a lot of threes. And he's also added a lot of more getting to the hoop, getting into the paint, which we thought was a little lacking last year. So we see both those things coming together. We didn't see a lot of that in the first game. We didn't see both of those things. So, seeing that in this game and seeing him really put it all back together and get to improve from where he was last year was really nice to see.
Yeah, to me, honestly, it was great to see Battle kind of playing like a weird dunker spot role at times where they're playing him as more of a true power forward, getting him the ball in the paint, and he showed a level of strength and toughness that I'd really never seen from him. And that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, definitely. I was very pleased to see that.
So I'll ask you, since you're the GW expert, how much did you know about Tyler Brelsford before he came out today? Played 17 minutes, had 5 assists, 4 rebounds, and was really kind of one of the guys who's keeping the ball flowing.
Well, I knew a little bit, early on non-conference games earlier, got to see a little bit of everybody. So from what I saw, I was pleased. And then, we had Jameer leaving earlier in the week, so we knew he was going to be playing a bigger role. So it was nice to see him stepping up a little and filling in Jameer's shoes, I guess you could say. So, yeah, I mean, for freshman, he didn't come in with a lot of hype, but, he's definitely stepped into the shoes that, he needed to. And I think maybe even added on a little more expectation in this game.
Yeah, and, I tweeted it out during the game. I felt like he was really key to getting the ball moving. And that was my biggest complaint with you guys throughout the month of December. You lost some bad games, but things just weren't flowing. I felt that you were really missing Potter after just how great of a distributor he was all of last year. So a lot of optimism for me as you go into that Duquesne game. Certainly, I feel a lot better about GW's chances in that game than I did coming into today. But the big story of the week before that, you lose two guys who were key players and starters last year, Jameer Nelson Jr. and Maceo Jack, both transfer out. So just how are you feeling as a GW fan about losing those two guys?
Well, obviously it's sad to see, especially with Jack leaving. It's sad to see a 4-year senior leave, and especially Jameer, a player with a bright future and loads of potential. It's always sad to see them leave, but, I guess for their own careers and for their own benefit, it made more sense for them to leave. I understand that. You see their roles were cut a little bit this year. Bringing its new transfers, Bishop playing a lot more, other guys coming in and taking away some of the minutes. So, it's sad to see them leave, but I think the team will miss them. They'll miss, what they offer, but at the same time, we the coach want to go in a different direction. And I think that's what we're seeing. And I think you saw hopefully what's a more final cut product of what we were looking for. So yeah, new players, everybody's doing their part, and that's just what it is. It looked very good today.
Yeah, I mean, and it's people who listen to this know I was excited for Jameer Nelson Jr. going into this year as anybody. I thought he was a big all-conference sleeper. And I really felt before they left that a big part of the reason why GW was struggling was because those two had seen their minutes cut. And as we saw today, maybe it was the opposite. Certainly a lot of games to go to find out for real, but you know, they didn't need those guys today. And we saw some of the other guards really kind of fall into their roles. So with that being said, how are you feeling going forward? I think everybody got really down on GW this week, and today might have turned some opinions.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wasn't feeling that good earlier this week, but, you know, today really turned a lot of stuff around. You can see, you know, maybe not having to consider as many different players now. We can focus more on a smaller rotation that gives us more confidence and more stability, which is definitely going to be nice. So from today, I'm feeling really good. I mean, I know it's Fordham. It's the first game, but holding any Division I basketball team to under 50 points and putting up 70 is not something to, you know, bat your eyes at. So I'm feeling confident. I would say we're at least back to where I thought we were going to be at the beginning of the season. And hopefully we'll be a little above that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's year two for Jamie and Christian. I personally really liked him as a coach going into this year. I questioned some of his moves in this last month. Today, as I just said, like, some of those moves are paying off. So how are you feeling about the state of the program as a whole?
State of the program? I'd say it's full of mayhem is what it is. It's looking good for me for today. You know, we had a rough patch of beginning. You know, it's not all going to be flowery and nice. It's going to have some hard times, but you know, you've got a good coach, you got a nice culture going. You can really build off that and benefit and come out of that stronger than before. And I think that's what we did. You know, some players chose to leave. That's their decision. You know, the people stuck around, they're bought in. So that's just what it is. You know, I think we're coming out of this stronger. I think we're going to see that later in the season.
Yeah, and for people, because, you know, we do still have some listeners who aren't deep in the Twitter game, might not know who you are. I know you did a great spot on SBU and Ferold and Friends at the end of last season. Like, it was literally the last thing I personally listened to in a podcast before the basketball world just came crumbling down. So for guys who don't know you, what drew you last year as a freshman at GW to really become what I refer to as the master of mayhem, like the great speakerphone for GW basketball in the Twitterverse?
Well, I take great pride in my school. I take great pride in, you know, almost everything they do. So I'll give them my, you know, just getting out there and trying to promote us a little bit, you know. I also love an underdog. We happen to be an underdog. So you put those two things together, you know, you get what you get as a master of mayhem myself. So with that, you know, I want to see us succeed. And I want people to put some respect on us. So that's what I do every day. I go out there, crack a couple of jokes, you know, make a few valid points here and there. And from that, what you get is the master of mayhem. That's what it is.
Yeah, and sadly, this is going to be audio only when we put it out. I am the only person right now who gets the pleasure of seeing Ryan on Zoom at 11 p.m. with a GW fisherman's hat on, which is just, you know, it's fantastic. You don't see, I guess it's maybe more of like a loose safari hat. You just don't see many of those anymore. For those of you who know what those hats look like, it's kind of like a cross between the two. He's got the long strap going down.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, with the amount of threes we're putting down today, it was raining a little bit. So, you know, I got to make sure there was no drops getting on my nice hair.
I'm not even going to comment. I'm just going to let that sit. So we'll wrap it up with this. As the master of mayhem, any other feelings you want to share about GW basketball right now?
Confident, young, yeah, exciting. That's what it is. You saw it today, turnovers. That's what it is. Defense first. That's all I got to say.
Fantastic. Ryan Paleo, bringing the mayhem even late at night. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you. No problem.